So if you've been traumatized to some degree, and all of us have to some degree, and that trauma is held in a bioenergetic system that goes throughout the body, right? You could call that the chakra system, which is kind of a common thing that people have heard of, or subtle body, you know, or Kundalini system, right? But that system hasn't been found by science yet. But based on the experience of many people going into non-ordinary states, it seems that this bioenergetic system seems to be something that most people can identify with, specifically if they've done like deep meditation or breath work.
Hi, everyone. My name is Anisha, and I'm your host for the Wellness Plus podcast. In today's episode, I would love to introduce you to the show, Sean Blackwell. He's the author of the book, Am I Bipolar or Waking Up? A memoir about his spiritual emergency journey and how it led him to help others with bipolar disorder. Hi, Sean. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Okay. Thanks for having me, Anisha. Appreciate it.
So can you start by walking us through for our viewers, what is a spiritual awakening or a spiritual emergency? What is the difference?
So spiritual awakening is something that usually, for the most part, people would think of as maybe a peak experience, and the symptoms or characteristics of a spiritual awakening might be things you might read about in sacred literature, particularly from like Eastern spirituality. So one of the things would be like a sense of connectedness or oneness. You lose a sense of sort of yourself as an individual, and you kind of emerge with everything around you. But it could be feelings of like expansive feelings of love coming from the heart, or deep insight into life in some capacity. So any of these things could be classified as an awakening. For many people, they might be atheists or agnostic, and then all of a sudden they have a realization that, oh my God, God exists, and it comes at an experiential level. You know, these are all types of awakenings, and there's a wide variety. But usually they involve, you know, some deep experiential aspect and a deepening of your value system as well, so that they can end up sort of changing your life in a sense. You know, the sort of the story of the banker who gives up his job and then goes off to the mountains, you know, that kind of thing. So that could be a spiritual awakening, all right? And this all sounds nice and makes for good movie content. I think Eckhart Tolle was a guy who, you know, talked about, you know, he had sort of this awakening experience, and then he was sitting on park benches for 2 years, you know, in the park, just sort of taking in reality. And it all sounds very, you know, really kind of, well, lucky him, you know, this kind of thing. But it can also go in what I would call spiritual emergency, which is a term coined by Dr. Stanislav Grof. And the spiritual emergency is, yeah, you've got all that stuff happening too, which is amazing, but it gets to be a bit too much. The sensory overload leads you to think that you're probably dreaming, or maybe you've died. And in my case, I thought I died. My spiritual emergency happened at a self-help seminar, the Landmark Forum, and we were doing a meditation on our fears. And then boom, I felt this big punch at the chest. And after that, my whole sensory experience shifted. Everything got sharper. I had a sense of all-knowingness. Like finally I knew things that I never thought I knew before. I felt connected to everything. I lost that sort of boundary between me and the external world. And everything kind of felt perfect to the point where I thought I had died in a scuba diving accident a few months earlier. And once you think you're dead, things start to go in a different direction because you lose your functionality, you know. And in my case, I thought I was being tested by God, which is another important characteristic. And I thought, you know, part of being tested meant I needed to take off my clothes, and I was afraid to urinate in public. And in my case, it was on the carpet of a hotel ballroom, like a 5-star hotel ballroom. And yeah, and then laid down in it, facing my fears, but laying down in it, right? And then when the security came, I refused to put my clothes back on. They call the police, and then they, you know, attached me to a hospital bed or a stretcher and took me to the psychiatric hospital. And I still thought I was going to heaven or nirvana or something like that. Okay. And with all of that, yeah, I ended up in the hospital, but it was still very good for me. This is something that happened in 1996, and it ended 7 years of on-again, off-again depression. And when I got out and finally had some time to integrate the experience, which took about 4 or 5 months, I went back to work. I was working in advertising at the time. And then over the next 3 years, my salary tripled, you know? So I went from a guy who was really struggling at work to like my career just taking off, you know? And people talked to me or talked to my boss more like about how it really felt like I cared about their business, this kind of thing. The first, I can't get into a lot of details, but some of the first projects I worked on ended up winning advertising awards. It was just like, boom, boom, boom. Everything started clicking, you know, except that I didn't want to be in advertising anymore. I had a shift in values as well. And so my whole life changed, you know, and changed for the better. So it was an emergency in that, yeah, it led to a crisis. It was overwhelming and difficult to integrate. But given time, I was able to process it. And what would be considered breakdown turned into breakthrough in my case. And unfortunately, that is a rare story. But that's how it happened for me.
Wow. So how did you know the difference between a spiritual emergency and any kind of other transformative experience that you may have had in the past?
Oh, because you feel like you're in touch with the divine, you know. It's not a religious awakening, and that's kind of important distinction to make. Some people go through a deep process of religious conversion, okay, which involves, for example, something like accepting Jesus into your heart, or maybe becoming a Buddhist, and you make that transition. And that's a kind of movement forward for people. Okay, that's okay. But in this case, you're having a very much more intimate connection with the divine. So that, for example, if you had been an atheist, or if you had been an agnostic, or if you're confronted by other atheists or agnostics, you would never be able to deny the connection to the divine that you have, and the realization that that's sort of flowing through every inch of your body. So from distinct experience, you know that God exists, okay? And God exists through you. So if somebody has an experience where they know from personal experience that God exists, regardless of your religious orientation or your belief system, then I would call that a spiritual awakening. And if it puts them in the psychiatric hospital and they come out better for it, I'd call that a spiritual emergency.
How did this lead into wanting to help others with bipolar disorder?
Almost from the minute I was in the hospital, you know, one of the thoughts I had when I was on the stretcher and then shackled to the emergency room bed was that it was a shame that I was dying because I had so much more work to do. Like, I almost wanted to start helping people from the time I was in the hospital, you know. And so when I found out that I wasn't dead, which happened a few days, well, I was forcibly injected, which was very traumatizing. But when I came back from my hospitalization, I kind of figured that I wasn't going into heaven or some kind of nirvana. And I was coming back to some sort of reality. Okay, I knew that. And from then, I wanted to sort of find my place in the world. But it took a few years to figure that out. And I ended up meeting a woman in Peru who was from Brazil. We got married, and I went and changed my whole life and moved to São Paulo, Brazil to live with her. Okay. And in 2000, so this was everything that happened to me, it happened in 1996. So this is a long time ago. Okay. And I haven't been in the hospital since. This was a one-time thing, right? In 2007, my wife had two nieces, two sisters, who entered into, quote, acute psychosis, which is what they would have labeled mine as acute psychosis. And I just went up to help with my wife and said, and once I heard the symptoms, I was like, well, what they're going through, well, starting with the first niece, my wife's niece, I heard the symptoms that, okay, she's having moments of profound love and connection with things, but other moments of fear. And I was like, well, this sounds like it might have been something like what happened to me. But they were diagnosing it as bipolar disorder. And I thought, well, I'm not sure. I don't know what bipolar disorder is. I had no idea, but I went to, you know, work with her. And because we were supporting her in a more empathetic way than would normally happen, she was able to recover very quickly, although she was medicated. Okay. And it was within a few weeks that I learned that we learned that she was going to be medicated for the entire summer, which totally shocked me. And then as I got into the research, I realized she was going to be medicated for her entire life, you know. And I was just floored with this information that people diagnosed with bipolar disorder are being medicated for life. So I just kind of went on this mission to help myself understand what is the difference between this thing, bipolar disorder, and this spiritual emergency that I had, because I was having a hard time determining the difference. And so my first videos on YouTube were on my YouTube channel, which at the time was called Am I Bipolar or Waking Up? And my first video was kind of like, hey guys, am I bipolar or waking up? You tell me. And I told my story. And then all this feedback came back to me from people around the world who were currently medicated for life, but had these extraordinarily powerful spiritual aspects to what they were going through. And all of a sudden, what I thought was like an experience like I had, which I thought would be like something 1 in 20,000 people might have, was looking more like 1 in 20. And I was like, whoa, like this is a big deal. This is a really big deal. Something is seriously wrong here. And I started making videos about what I was learning about pioneering psychologists, for example, who had actually supported people through acute psychosis in first break, people like Dr. Lauren Mosher at Soteria House, Dr. John Weir Perry at the Diabasis Clinic. I started to learn about their work. And then I started to see that this concept I'd adopted of spiritual emergency was actually just a small piece of a bigger puzzle, which was that there were leading edge psychologists in the 1980s who had actually supported people through acute psychosis entirely, you know? And that work actually goes back to Dr. Artie Lang in the 1960s. So the cat was out of the bag to a certain degree, because what I did was I started to put together the theoretical concepts that had helped me understand what was going on with people with bipolar disorder, people labeled with bipolar disorder, okay? And the idea I had was that if I had studied it in a book and it came from a pioneering psychologist like Dr. Stanislav Grof or John Weir Perry or Lauren Mosher, if I had learned about something in a book, if it had reflected my experience or somebody I'd worked with directly, like my nieces, and people were reporting it to me through the comment section in YouTube with all those YouTubers responding to my book or responding to my videos, then I would make a video about it. And I made these very intensive slideshows. And so one of the first video I made was called The Real Cause of Bipolar Disorder, this sort of cocky title to get some attention. And usually acute psychosis, almost always, starts with a series of powerful triggers, okay? Usually related to loss or failure, but sometimes it could be success. So for example, winning the lottery could be a trigger for a manic episode, but it often involves death in the family, changing location, going away to university. These are very common triggers. And the use of mind-altering substances as well, in particular psychedelics and heavy marijuana use can be a significant trigger. So over 80% of the people who have contacted me were using mind-altering substances before their first episode. Okay, so that can be a break. But also very intense meditation. For example, going on a 10-day Vipassana meditation retreat can be a trigger, because all of these different things break down our ego functioning. And it's when that ego breaks down, either through the sort of good spiritual means of being an intensive meditator or being a drug addicted college student, if that ego breaks down, then all of a sudden we can lose our functionality, you know? So that's where it starts, okay? And then I just might say then once that ego breaks down, you can have the mystic experiences that we've already talked about, but then later what will come up are roots of trauma that will start to surface. So that's the other force coming through. So when people have had significant trauma in their lives, that can be a big thing that's looking to heal during these experiences, whether you call it acute psychosis or spiritual emergency, all right? And I would say that on the spiritual emergency sort of end of the spectrum, you'll find people who've tend to have fairly blessed lives, not so traumatized. Maybe they're dealing with emotional repression as part of their traumas. And then at the other end of the spectrum where it's more difficult, you'll have like serious physical and sexual abuse happening to people at a young age. And that's a much more challenging task to deal with. But I see both as spiritual at the same time. It's just one is more challenging than the other.
How do you feel about medication over meditation?
Great question. I think at this point where our society is at, medication is going to be with us for a while, okay? And to really work on your healing, if you've been diagnosed with something like bipolar disorder that you think has a strong spiritual dimension and you want to get off that medication, you need to dedicate yourself to a pretty serious healing package, you might say, or a healing focus, right? If you don't, you're probably going to wind up having repeated episodes. It's going to happen again and again and again, okay? And that healing path, there are people who can find their own healing path. I have a friend of mine who's a doctor who was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. In his case, I think it was bipolar 2, which didn't get him in the psychiatric hospital. But just watching my videos gave him a different orientation towards his condition. And he was able to go off medication and has been off medication for 10 years, you know. So sometimes just a mental reorientation towards what you're going through as an inner spiritual process or emotional process can be enough to get you off meds. But for most people, it's going to be that they're going to need help and deeper work. And that's why I do healing retreats now. I do private healing retreats for people. Whether I like it or not, most people are going to be medicated to start, okay? And often when they come to my work, they're thinking, well, is this a mental illness? And if it is, I need medication. Or is it a spiritual experience in which I don't need medication? And what I'd suggest to them is that focus on your functionality. And if you need those medications to function, to hold your family together, to keep your job, etc., keep using those meds. But then, you know, find the practices that are going to help you heal at the same time, all right? And meditation can be part of that. I'm a certified holotropic breathwork facilitator, and that's the main technique I use on my retreats, is a variation on holotropic breathwork, which was a technique developed by Dr. Stanislav Grof, all right? So I'm saying stay with the medications and work on your healing process. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
Can you go more in depth about breath work?
Sure. Well, the underlying idea of my work is that your disorder is primarily caused by trauma. It might be caused by just excessive drug use, but usually people who are using drugs excessively are highly traumatized people because they don't feel good about themselves. So they're using the drugs to sort of self-medicate, you might say. Right. And But so if you've been traumatized to some degree, and all of us have to some degree, and that trauma is held in a bioenergetic system that goes throughout the body, right? You could call that the chakra system, which is kind of a common thing that people have heard of, or a subtle body, or Kundalini system, right? But that system hasn't been found by science yet. But based on the experience of many people going into non-ordinary states, it seems that this bioenergetic system seems to be something that, you know, most people can identify with, you know, specifically if they've done, you know, certain esoteric practices like deep meditation, you know, or breath work. So the trauma is lodged in blockages in that bioenergetic system. This is the analogy we go with. And so to heal, you want to bring that, you want to unlock those blockages, bringing the trauma to the surface. And that can be a very powerful and emotional and spiritual process. And in my case, what I use is holotropic breath work. Okay. So what holotropic breath work will do? Well, first, holotropic means moving towards wholeness. And holotropic breath work is a very trademarked form of breath work. So many times you'll hear about many variations on breath work these days, and many people will say, oh, I've done breath work. I did breath work in my kitchen for 10 minutes yesterday. It's like, that's not holotropic breath work. I'm sorry. It's a trademark format with Groff transpersonal training. Groff legacy training is another trainer that's legitimate. Okay. But what happens is you have a very set format of a safe set and setting, and a fixed time period, and a trained facilitator, and powerful music. And all of this comes together so that when the person starts to breathe, there's no specific breathing technique. It's just an over-breathing that you can breathe at your own pace. So some people might want to breathe through the nose, like inhale through the nose and out through the mouth. I can't because my nose doesn't really work. It's just for show. So I breathe through the mouth, which a lot of pranayama people will say is terrible, but I breathe like this, like, and this accelerated breathing will start to take you into a mild, non-ordinary state. At least that's the way it will start. All right. But it's a little bit like, it's not like a drug experience where you're just catapulted into another reality. With holotropic breath work, you're in this reality and you're in touch with this other side at the same time. So it's almost as if you're a computer and you've got your sort of Microsoft Word functionality and Excel, and that's all part of your computer. But you've also got the internet as well. And that internet is very expansive. And our brains are that way. In our brains, we've got sort of this sort of linear functioning brain, but we also have this expansive internet aspect, which is really connected, seems to be connected to the entire universe. And Stan Grof is the first psychologist to really spell that out in his books. And through that, we're intimately connected. And so when you go into holotropic breathwork in these non-ordinary states, certain experiences will come up with you that will be sort of powerful, and you're encouraged to sort of work with them through movement and vocalization in a very primal way, right? So for example, I might, you know, have a feeling, well, I could have a physical feeling, like I could just have a lot of tension come up. So I just might be like this and all tensed up on the mat, just because you're on a yoga mat when all this is happening, you know. But then the music might move me in a different way, and I might feel like I'm sailing or flying. And in those moments, your arms are out and you're just moving in the way that you feel like the music and the inner experience wants you to go, you know. So it almost becomes like a dance, and you're just encouraged to really express yourself with whatever's coming up. And it can be difficult. I've been in one of the first breathwork experiences that I ever went into. One of the things I heard from the other side of the room was a woman, you know, yelling, "Don't touch me, don't touch me." You know, she was clearly going through something abuse related, you know, early on. And with experienced breathers, if an untrained person went into a room full of experienced breathers, it can really seem like a mass exorcism is taking place, because it can just seem totally bonkers. It really can. But there's a logic to the madness.
Are they energetic blockages that are coming up?
There's a debate on whether these experiences are happening internally or externally. But I see like us as humans as sort of embedded in a spiritual reality, almost like fish debating the existence of water, you know. So God is all around us, is within us. It's a divine intelligence. It's working through every cell of our body at all times. And to a certain degree, it's even guiding this interview.
I definitely feel that for sure.
Great, great.
In your own experience, how has breathwork helped you?
In certain moments, there have been really powerful emotions that have come up that, if they don't come up for myself, they get projected. Okay. So there was one experience I had not too many years ago, for example, where I had the sensation that I was bashing in the head of like an enemy. Like if I were like a sort of a caveman with a rock and I was killing that person, okay? So if I'm not working that energy out on the breathwork mat, then somehow that energy is gonna get projected into my real life, all right? And so not that I'm gonna kill somebody, but I might be a little aggressive here or there, maybe with my words, you know? Not the best energy you wanna be working with, you know? And actually, when I got off the breathwork mat, I was pretty embarrassed. I was like, I didn't want people to see something that dark and disturbing inside of me, you know? And so it can get you in touch with pretty dark parts of yourself. And then once those energies are processed, then that energy sort of gets converted and becomes something that becomes part of your daily life. It doesn't own you anymore. And so you're free of it. You're more energized. And pretty much any healing process will make you more open, spontaneous, and relaxed, right? And then on the other end, in a more tangible way, I've had birth process experiences come up too, where certain birth traumas are getting resolved. This was discovered by Dr. Stan Grof as well, that there's basically four phases of our birth process. The first is that you're at kind of peace with the mother. If you've got a good womb, okay, you're sort of floating in the placenta, everything's cool, you're one with the universe. The second is you're outgrowing that space and you're feeling stuck. The third is you've got to get out of there and you need to fight for your life out the birth canal. It's a struggle for life and death. And then the fourth is the actual birth itself, which can lead people to a sense of victory, but also confusion. So there's these four phases. And you can have traumas sort of unfold at any of these phases. And a very common one, for example, is that when people have a cesarean section, when they're born cesarean, they're denied the struggle out the birth canal. And so what can happen is that they can live their lives feeling like their lives are being controlled by other people, for example. Another very common one is feeling trapped in your life. If you're in one relationship or another, or after another, where you're constantly feeling trapped in that relationship, it's probably related to the second phase of the birth process, where you've outgrown the placenta. Okay. And so these are birth traumas, birth traumas impact, you know, our lives on a regular basis, and we're really not aware of it. And this was a big discovery of Stan Grof. So I've had some of that come up for myself as well as some other very kind of mystic experiences that just left me feeling very good, but it's hard to even give it a good descriptor. For example, I went through a period of sadness, 2 or 3 months of just feeling regularly sad. And then thinking I was gonna go into more sadness on the breathwork mat. And then I just had the vision of myself as a salamander on a beach in Indonesia and feeling myself just so primal as like this primal salamander, I just started laughing. And I had my trainers with me sort of putting pressure on my shoulders because I felt like I had no arms, like I'm just flopping around on the beach. And I just started laughing my ass off for about 15 minutes. And it brought a certain joyfulness that helped to ease that sadness, you know. So this healing field, or inner healer, as Groff calls it, which is basically God, can come and start to work through us in some very tangible ways.
What is the difference between breath work and a heightened state of meditation?
There can be some overlap, okay? Because you're both going into a non-ordinary state to a certain degree. But the focus is very different, okay? Because when you go into a heightened state of meditation, you're getting there, entering through profound stillness, right? And that's going to probably lead you into a place that's very peaceful, probably, okay? But I've also done the 10-day Vipassana meditation retreat, where they tell you after 3 days, your thoughts are going to stop. And they do, because you're meditating 10 hours a day. And so day three comes and you stop, right? You get dead silent, right? But what happened with me on day four, this was in 2009, I had a huge explosion at the heart chakra and my organs started vibrating and I had cold energy coming up through my legs and all through my chest. And I was afraid I might faint, and I had to stop meditating and go to bed. And then for the next 5 days, I had energies just blasting through me from all throughout my body, you know.
Would you call that a Kundalini awakening?
Exactly. Yeah, it was a Kundalini awakening. Now, what was the difference between my spiritual emergency and my Kundalini awakening? It was my Kundalini awakening. I knew what was going on. So I knew I wasn't dead or dying. I didn't get delusional. If my Kundalini awakening had happened in 1996, when my first one did, I would have ended up worse off in the psychiatric hospital, because it was way more powerful than what got me hospitalized, you know. So, and those energies and those type of energies and processes are the type of things that you're voluntarily going after with holotropic breathwork. You're voluntarily entering in contact with your psyche and saying, I'm going to work out these powerful processes. And you've got facilitators to help you do that, so you don't go into psychosis, right? But when I'm on the 10-day meditation retreat and all this starts to unfold, there's no support there whatsoever, because all the volunteer Buddhists see is that you're misbehaving. You know, you're supposed to be meditating and being still, and your whole body wants to be screaming and moving, and you need support and all this stuff, and you're not in a position to get it. And so it's common at the Vipassana meditations for them to call an ambulance and for them to take it to the psychiatric hospital. All right. So I would say that with holotropic breath work, you're getting in touch with the same material that people get in touch with psychosis, but you're going there voluntarily, so you're able to process it and you're supported. So there's very little risk of anything difficult or wrong going on, anything detrimental, right? When you're meditating, that's generally not the situation. People are not prepared for powerful non-ordinary state experiences to kind of explode upon you. You're supposed to be going to a place of stillness, you know.
What happened after your Kundalini awakening?
I was super sensitive for the next couple of months. I had a lot of vibrational activity happening in my thighs. I had hot pins in my toes. My dream life, I think, got a lot more vivid. And I was just having these energetic feelings, mostly in the toes, that were really annoying my wife, because we'd be in bed together. And then I'd be like, like this kind of thing, you know. And that got easier to deal with after about 6 months, you know. But you're getting more emotionally sensitized and emotionally fluid. I would put it that way. And I think one thing that Ken Wilber said, which is really interesting, is he said, as you start the sort of enlightening process, you suffer less, but you feel more pain. So when you're a person who isn't particularly developed, you're kind of numb to what's going on with you, you know? And then the pain that you're sort of taking on, you're not feeling it, but then you're acting on it in your daily life and you're causing a lot of drama, you know? Once you start to develop and develop on the spiritual path, you get so sensitized to what's going on inside of you and what's happening. And then you can eventually learn techniques to start to process these things even at home. Like, I'm processing things on a regular basis now where I might go for a walk and then I come home and I'm feeling lonely, for example. And then I'll go to my room and go into a process not that different from holotropic breathwork and just work out those feelings of loneliness that might have triggers in my day-to-day life here, but have deeper roots, for example, in my infancy and things like that. And then in that way, healing from things like bipolar disorder or from a spiritual emergency becomes synonymous with personal development. You're just, personal development becomes just a regular part of your daily life.
After this Kundalini, did you feel as though you're more aware of your thought patterns and more aware of your emotions more than ever, as you said? But did you ever feel it was neutralizing out?
I think you become more open to people, more naturally spontaneous, more relaxed, and you carry less of a persona. You can hit some hard spots, okay? I'm not saying you can't. And it's almost like the more equipped you are to deal with those hard spots, then they'll show up. And you can have some tough moments, you know? And the universe will continue to challenge you and give you more challenging scenarios to work through, for example, right? Almost like, you know, you've graduated high school. Okay, now you're in university. Oh, you passed university. Okay, here's your graduate school. You know, you get bigger challenges as they come along. But you're going to confront, like, say, given one particular situation with a deeper sense of peace, groundedness, openness, and transparency, these kind of values, you know. The fake part of living just starts to disintegrate.
Have you ever had to deal with a form of skepticism when it comes to healing modalities and actual forms of therapy?
Actually, no. I've never had a single psychiatrist, had a single problem with anything I've had to say. They've all been extremely agreeable. Of course, that was a joke.
I believed you for a second.
Yeah, I know. I had you. I had you going. I had you. You're like, okay, no. It's tough. It's a materialist paradigm out there. My work is an uphill battle. And thankfully, I'm not the only one out there who's sort of taken up the mission at this point. There's a few people out there talking spiritual emergency and the spiritual dimension of bipolar, this kind of thing. But for mainstream psychiatry, it's still super taboo, like completely taboo. I would only say I think that right now the main thrust from like an alternative movement is very anti-psychiatry, you know. So like in 2013, when I was down visiting you guys at Psyche Truth in Texas, they had the Alternatives to Psychiatry conference in 2013 there. And it was just one big anti-psychiatry love fest or hate fest, you might say, you know. And I don't think we need to go that route. I think that psychiatry's got its place, but that if you really feel that you've got a strong spiritual dimension to what you're dealing with, you don't need to fight the system. You just need to work on your own healing, and the system will support you with the medications that you need until you've done enough healing to start withdrawing slowly and safely. You know, you don't need to fight the system.
So did you ever feel as though traditional forms of therapy and implementing your intuition when it comes to doing your own spiritual modalities, the combination of the two complemented each other?
Yeah, if we're talking about talk therapy, I think talk therapy, psychology, just like psychiatry, has a role, right? But one of the issues is that with talk therapy, we're acting like that's the cure for people's problems, and it's not. You have to move the energy involved in these things. So I've had moments in my life where I've been working through particular like difficult moments, and I've gone to a talk therapist, and what we would do, because she understood my modality. We actually studied together a little bit, so we were friends. And we would start talking about, for example, an issue with, my father, okay? And the more we would talk about it, 20 minutes into the session, I was actually feeling worse than when we started. And why? It's because I'm opening up about this and I'm unpacking all that energy. And then she would say, where do you feel it in your body? And then I would start to identify, okay, I'm feeling shame. I'm feeling shame in the heart area, for example. And she'd say, well, what do you want to do with that? And that's when I had the insight that, hey, once I'm in touch with certain emotions in talk therapy, I can use my holotropic breathwork practices to move that energy, right? So halfway into my talk therapy session, and I might be like on her sofa, and I might be like, this kind of thing, you know? And I would leave her therapy room exhausted, right? So it was great for me to see that, you know, talk therapy can really open up the territory we need to work with. But that once it's open, you've got to work with it energetically. And I would say 99% of psychologists do not understand that.
Do you ever think there will be a breakthrough at some point?
Well, I've built all my work online. You know, I've been doing this since 2007, all with the idea of a breakthrough. And for me, I thought the breakthrough would happen with the Mayan calendar in 2012. And 2012 turned out to be one of the most disappointing years of my entire life. There was no breakthrough happening at all. And now what I'm seeing is a society, particularly in the United States, that is getting more and more fractured and more stressed. A lot more really strange behavior going on. Horrific, you know, drug addiction taking place. Younger generation with absolutely no idea of how to behave in public, for example, you know, and a lot of kids with some pretty serious emotional issues, you know. So I think that we will eventually arrive at a breaking point where people will really start to look for different answers. It's already happening. The only trouble right now is that as we move into a culture of diversity, sort of what's helpful is just sort of seen as equal with what is actually superstitious nonsense or potentially dangerous, you know. We need to get to a place where I think there's a little bit more theory that's recognized as like sound. There's a little bit more maturity involved in alternative practices.
For somebody who is on a spiritual journey or having a spiritual emergency, in your opinion, how would you help individuals navigate?
There's a few places online that you can get support. Spiritual Emergency Network, if you Google that, you could find support there. My website is called Bipolar Awakenings, okay? But I tend not to focus on, like, I'm not an online help center. I'm more about doing private retreats, and I do some online work with people as well, like online healing practices. So, you know, that's the real start of it. There's a Facebook support group called Shades of Awakening, which has been very helpful, I think, for people. And so just knowing that other people are going through this can be great. That's one thing. Second thing is stop using drugs. Just stop. And don't even think about, well, you know, what if I use CDB instead of THC marijuana, or this grade of LSD instead of this or whatever? No, just stop completely using mind-altering substances. They really are detrimental to the psyche, and it's vastly underreported, you know. So they would be the first steps. And then if you're having repeated episodes, take your meds. Don't be shy about doing that. But if you want to do some deeper healing work, I'm the pioneer. There are some respite centers, particularly in the Northeast, Vermont, New Hampshire, places like that, where people who are having experiences of extreme states can go to. But from my experience, they're not really working with people in a very active way. It's more a place just where people can go and relax and de-stress, you know, this kind of thing. They sit, you know, they sit on the sofas and they smoke their cigarettes, and it's good. It's better than being in the psychiatric hospital, but it's not exactly hands-on therapeutic work.
If people are in your position that you were years ago when you were first starting out, what advice would you give to people?
I'd say look at my videos, because my videos explain every aspect of the spiritual dimension and healing potential of bipolar disorder. And once you see that, then you understand that what happened to you is not chaos. Your brain is not mush, but it's happening for a reason, you know. And I keep referring back to my own work, but I'm the pioneer, you know, and I'm proud of that. So I navigated my journey with the work of studying Dr. Stan Grof. His books, The Stormy, Search for the Self, Spiritual Emergency. I started with his books. And I think my work online is more a little bit more accessible than his books. But his books are great. If you want to read the books, please read the books. You know, John Weir Perry's book, Two Trials of the Visionary Mind, Lauren Mosher, Soteria House. You know, these are all books that bring a very powerful alternative perspective.
What do you envision for the future of mental health care? And then particularly in relation to integrating spiritual practices and modalities?
I think as a society, we need to get to a place where we recognize that just regular life has a spiritual dimension to it. Once that's in place, healing will become very easy. I mean, I think just with a different cultural orientation, probably 80% of the people who are on psychiatric medications today wouldn't be. But it requires a pretty significant cultural shift. And right now we're not getting there. we're not very close, I wouldn't say. You've probably got maybe 10% of like the American, Canadian population who are in a position to really grasp and identify with what I'm talking about. Maybe half of the Psyche Truth people, like your Psyche Truth listeners, they'd be able to get where we're at, you know. But for most people, this is just woo-woo nonsense, you know. And they're either stuck in a scientific materialist paradigm or they're stuck in a religious paradigm. And unfortunately, that's where they're at. And that's not really going to help move the needle regarding mental disorders. You got to come from what I would call an integral place where you see spirit as a part of daily life. And then you can start to see that, well, a couple of things about spirit. First, it's not particularly special. Like your biology, like we've all got biology, we've all got a spiritual dimension. So if you're having a spiritual experience, it doesn't make you Jesus. It's just, okay, you've had a spiritual experience. And sometimes they can be blissful and beneficial and wonderful. And other times they can be disturbing and perhaps even demonic, you know. But either way, anybody can have these experiences. They're very easy to have. And once we recognize that, then we can see mental illness as for what it is, which is it's a spiritual disorder more than anything. It's not a mental disorder, it's a spiritual disorder. It's happening in this chakra system that goes through your whole body.
It starts within and then so without at some point, right?
Yeah, it takes time. Hopefully videos like this will start to move the needle.
I feel as though it has more and more. There's more podcasts coming out. There's more YouTube channels, at least from what I've seen, trying to integrate and understand my own spiritual journey of where I am. In the past couple of years, it's all about I've just seeking, trying to find the answers. So I have found more than ever. I feel like before there wasn't as much because I'm a millennial. So I was on the internet the entire time and people are now going into channeling and being able to express that more on a public network. So I am slowly finding that hopefully we can get there, but I do understand your point as well. It's going to take time.
Yeah. And who knows, maybe it comes in one big wow breakthrough. You know, all of a sudden we have a sort of like 1960s, a revolution, Age of Aquarius kind of moment, you know, which would be nice. But so far, it's been quite the grind, I would say.
Well, Sean, it was so great talking to you. Where can we find you?
You can check out my website. You know, my work started as Am I Bipolar or Waking Up? But that's not a question anymore. So my website is called Bipolar Awakenings. And I think it's a great term because it gives us new language for what's going on. We tend to think of the term bipolar as a sort of negative term, you know, implying medication for life. Awakenings as a positive term with, wow, you're kind of going towards enlightenment. But what people are going through is what I call a bipolar awakening, which has potential to cut either way, you know, depending on how you deal with it. So bipolarawakenings.com.
Thank you so much for sharing your insights.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. It's good to be back in touch with you guys at Psychic Truth.